Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Desi, noun, a person of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Nepali, or Sri Lankan origin who lives abroad.
American Desi. Well, that's what we hope to discover here. What is up, everybody? Welcome to this week's episode of American Desis. I'm Akash.
I'm Arjun.
And this week...
I sounded real sad when I said that.
Yo, you're in a shitty mood, and that's fine. You're entitled to feel that way. You know, as a comedian, I will... You know what sucks about being a comedian is I always have to be in a good mood for however long I'm on stage.
Really?
It's the single most important thing. If I'm not having fun, everything falls apart up there. So if I go up there and I'm not having fun, I'm in a bad mood. Not only am I in a bad mood and not going to do well, I'm going to get in a shittier mood because I'm not going to do well, and I'm going to beat myself up about that for an entire day. It's a miserable job I chose, honestly. Fucking be a doctor, everybody.
Guys, how hopeful could we have started? How much more hopeful could we have started?
I'm actually in a solid mood. I'm just telling you, I empathize. That's all I wanted you to know.
I appreciate you. Well, thankfully for our listeners, or maybe not thankfully, I feel no pressure to be anything other than myself in this next 35 minutes.
So many girls are going to tweet, you should never feel anything but yourself. And so many guys are going to be like, all right, motherfucker, you better cheer up because I ain't trying to listen to an hour of you being depressed.
Let's segue into Mala somehow, or
well,
just dive.
Yeah, listen, let's talk about Mala because she was very open about her feelings and she was very comfortable with feeling however she felt. And I thought it was a great interview, and we got a lot of great feedback. Thank you, everybody, for the positive reinforcement. We can always use that. But yeah, I thought it was a really good two-part interview. I was really happy with it, and I was really happy that she came on.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to, you know, definitely send thanks to her for giving us that time. I mean, and not only her time, but she was very, very open, like you said, and very generous with her, you know, her thoughts.
Right.
And exciting thing is it never felt like an interview. It always felt like a conversation.
It was very conversational.
There was a few things that jumped out at me. One was she had an incredibly compassionate and what I would call holistic view of the world. And what I mean by that, well, the compassion, let's just tackle that really quickly. Her way that she talked about her father, the way that she talked about the abuse that she had received in his care, incredible amount of compassion towards this man. And yes, granted, and she said it's been 20 years that we saw her where she is now with it, but still, even that was incredibly inspiring to know that, you know, we can get to that level of compassion for people. And her way of looking at, now the holistic way I'm going to jump into, is the way that she was able to step back and detach enough, as they talk about a lot in Buddhism, detach to see that what she went through made her who she is, and she was able to be grateful for that.
Yeah.
She was able to have what seemed like an element of, you know, true gratitude that, you know, this happened and that made me who I am. And she said, I owe everything to my father. Like, I was stunned. I was really stunned when she was talking about that. I was like, wow, I said it in the podcast, and I'm underlining it. It really is, to me, in my opinion, an evolved way of looking at the world. And if you allow me one more second, because I know I'm a little bit on a soapbox here, but is why, to me, it feels evolved is important, is that it doesn't – we so often want black and white in our lives. We so often – because the alternative is that everything is shifting and unknown. And – my understanding of the reality of life is that everything is always shifting and unknown, right? And her ability to say that there are no villains and victims, that this is just about people, to me is her being able to sit with that truth, that that everything is always shifting and that nothing is black and white. I don't know. To me, that's beautiful. And it's definitely something I, you know, aspire to.
Arjun only wanted to spend 12 minutes talking about the discussion because we have so much stuff. Talking about the interview because we have so much stuff to talk about from community. And that was 7 of the minutes right there.
That was so, not. It was a minute was and a half.
Absurd. Oh, my God.
Here's what I will agree with you, though.
I've always said there's a lot of people who go through whatever they go through. And I've always said you have two choices when you go through a lot as a child or whatever. You can either use what you went through as an excuse to fail and say, well, you know, I had no choice but to fail because my dad was this, this, and this. Or you can use it as fuel to say, I'm still going to make it in spite of what happened because that made me a stronger person. Whatever I went through, the people who didn't have to go through that are not going to be as strong as me. And she seemed to take the latter of you.
Can I ask you a question?
Because
I heard it slightly differently. I heard it her saying, this made me who I am. This was a part of, it was in a way of accepting, this made me who I am. Do you think that that's a different thing than what you're saying, or is that the same?
This made me who I am. I heard the same sentence, but I took it like, this is, I wouldn't be here in the position I'm in of success if it wasn't for these things. That's how I interpreted it.
Gotcha. Word. There was another line. I mean, you wanted to talk about the Brown Panther thing.
I do. I think we can get back to that. I think you said something that didn't land on me too hard at the time, and then you said it again, before we were talking, and I was like, oh, yeah, fuck, that's really crazy.
She said she was talking about her parents' marriage, and for those of you that read the book, like, based on the way that the mother's husband, assimilates and, like, takes to American culture, I assumed that he was the one that wanted to take them to America. And it was really interesting in the interview where Mala said, no, it was my mom. And she said that the reason that happened was because they were married from different castes at a time where that was, you know, a bigger deal. She knew that the marriage wouldn't work in India. And so she went to America, this land of, you know, liberty and freedom for them to be who they wanted to be. And yet the move to America seemed to have really been a downturn for them and their marriage because they both were so out of place here and they couldn't really adjust. And I don't know, to me, it's just so tragic. Like, it couldn't work in India and yet they came to America where it should be able to work because of the freedom, and yet them being so fish out of water, it ends up, you know, it ends up destroying them.
Yeah, and this is not something they could have known at the time, but in hindsight, it would have probably worked in India because her family was fine with it, and her family was the more successful, happier, whatever family. And I know traditionally you always went and live with the husband's family, but since they were already willing to buck tradition and get a love marriage, I think they would have probably just ended up spending a lot more time with the mother's side of the family, and he wouldn't have found alcohol nearly as easily, at least. And I think it had a much better chance of working in India than it did in America, where I don't know if he just couldn't handle America. I don't know what made.
Well, it was both of them. Hold up a second. It was both of them. I mean, we talk about that though. She talks about it because she thinks her idea was that the pressures of like being not like at home here, the pressures of work that wasn't going well, the pressures of trying to keep up surroundings, and the pressures of being away, the loneliness they both felt. I mean, Mala's mother also missed her family, you know, and the both of them. And that's a big stress. That can be an incredibly large stress on people's lives.
You know, what's interesting is her mom in the book is so ready to assimilate. Like, she only speaks English, et cetera, et cetera. And that seems like if maybe she was more willing to hold on to some of the things from back home, it might have worked better. I don't know. I'm not trying to correct her.
I don't know. I mean,
thought I had.
That's pure speculation on that one.
For sure.
But it was just that jumped out to me at just like, fuck, that's tragic. It couldn't work in India, so they went to a place where they thought it could work, and the move there made it not, I don't know, it was sad. It made me sad.
You know, what's really sad about that to me is she sacrificed family for love, and then the love fell apart and family was gone, and then it's just, what do you have left?
Yeah, that's a... Yeah, fuck.
Heavy,
that's
right?
True.
It's heavy.
It's heavy, and it makes you wonder. It makes you wonder, like, you know, we romanticize love a lot. And listen, I'm a hopeless romantic, and so are you.
Yeah.
We romanticize love an immense amount. I wonder sometimes if that's a little
you know,
dangerous.
I had a very interesting conversation with a family member who just loves to read. His fiance is a psychiatrist resident, so he just reads all her psychiatric journals and stuff for fun. And he talked about the evolution of love and the feeling of love and why it fades. And he said these humans were born however many thousands of years ago with this certain obsessive like trait about them, characteristic. And love is essentially just they would obsess over this person. And they needed to, I guess, consume them, for lack of a better word, a certain amount. So they always needed to be around them. They were in love with them. And then those are the people who were more apt to have offspring that reproduced. Because if I'm always willing to be around this girl that I reproduce with, the kid is always going to be around me. Kid has a better chance of surviving. So that tended to be the trait that got passed on, that got evolved into us. And that's all love is, really, is just an obsession over a person. And the reason love fades is because you have possess them enough in your mind that the obsession goes away. So we hopeless Whoa. Romantic is really just us being obsessive. And I was thinking about this last night. I'm super obsessive. Like, if I decide I want a pair of shoes, I'm getting that fucking pair of shoes. I don't care.
Huh.
And a girl, I'm just going to – I used to think I was just – I'm really just obsessing over this girl to an insane amount. And what's scary is if I possess her 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, however much I want, then I'm just going to be like, all right, well, you know, next bitch, what's up? Like, that's a scary thing.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. I've never heard of this and never thought about this, so I'm processing it right now.
I didn't know it would fit in. I know we have a 12-minute time limit. We're already at 11, but fuck it. You know what I mean? It was interesting.
And obviously,
it was a fascinating talk. It was a real mind fuck to have that talk with him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and this is why, you know, I guess immediately when you were talking about this, I thought that, oh, okay, that's why people always say, you know, you need to love yourself before you love anybody else. Because if you love yourself, then it's not about possessing. Then it's about just relating with someone. And then it's not, then it's a daily choice to stay with someone.
I don't know if possessing, real quick, is the right word. I just use it because I didn't have a better one. But you just obsess over this person a certain amount. But I think this is where arranged marriages come into play. It's like, listen, this love thing is going to fade. This obsession is going to go away. We need to make sure you're still compatible beyond this obsession.
Right. And I think that's where the balance comes in. I mean, again, not to lift up arranged marriages or love or like demonize love, you know, not to do either. But I think there is elements of like understanding that companionship and just like, hey, we are partners with each other.
Right.
Is an important thing. The last thing that I really wanted to talk about was just what I thought was an amazing point she said was the world, everyone, it's murky for everyone. Life is murky for everyone. Life is always shifting and can be, I mean, listen, we're young men, you know, Akash will say he's not, but he is. We're both young men. We're in our late 20s, you know, that age range. And I'm trying to be as good for you as
hilarious.
Possible. Though.
I already said it on this podcast. Fuck it. But whatever. Be out here.
Well, you, all right, whatever. My point is, like, this is a really stressful time in a lot of people's lives. And I think that life can be stressful all the time. And it is murky. And why can that be bad? Why have we painted it that is bad if that's what the whole world is doing? That was a really resonant point for me. It's like, yeah, you know what? Wait a minute. We get so wrapped up in this idea of perfection and like this and Facebook and Instagram and social media doesn't help that. We're all putting on this like good front. Like that's the front that we put up, is that everything's great. Everything's perfect. Like all of my posts, let's just be real for a second. All of my posts over the last few days have been about like these amazing successes that have been happening for me. Yet none of them, if you just look at that, you'll be like, oh man, he's like really happy. Everything's going really well. And no one would know like shit, man. There's like a weird like dark like shift and transition and insecurity thing that keeps getting up in my life right now. No one would know that because that's not what we're allowed to put out there.
I think in our business, I didn't even give a fuck before. I think now that I'm in this business, you have to, perception is reality. Maybe that's for everybody's life, but definitely in this business. So you have to kind of uphold this perception that you're doing this, and this. And it is annoying. And every once in a while, let's just post comments that people put about how we ain't shit. I'll just post a negative YouTube comment like once every couple of weeks, just so people know, I mean, this is what it
no,
is.
No, but let's less about real talking about other people, but like letting other people know, yeah, you know what? Stuff is tough sometimes, and that's okay. And we can talk about that. And it doesn't have to be every time you post that everything has to be perfect to present this idea. We don't have to like be perfect to be, I mean, this is a very personal thing, and that's why like I'm very sensitive to it. But like, I've definitely struggled with the idea that you need to be perfect in order to be loved, which is crazy, because I don't ask that of other people. I mean, it's just, sorry, I got into a rant and probably a little more personal than I needed to.
It's got very therapeutic for you. Hey, that's fine. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're entitled to do that.
Let's. Did you want to talk about the Brown Panthers thing?
Yeah,
I think it'll come up with Swagistani. So do you think we can
perfect.
Hold off?
Let's wait. Yeah, let's go.
All right, cool. Let's jump into Twitter.
Okay.
Real quick Twitter section today, because we had several emails that we want to jump to that were really exciting. Shanaz, welcome back. Thank you for telling us we've got our podcast game back. I didn't know we lost it, but that's good to know, I guess. I love how many of y'all were inspired to buy the book. I think that that's a great thing. And
buy
I think
the
that
book. It's
should.
A good it's, book.
Sarah Myers, I would like to talk about what she said. She said, I know people wonder why this white girl continues to listen to this podcast. I even wondered if I could connect to this book before reading it. I was almost immediately able to connect to Mala, being bullied and feeling out of place in school. It wasn't because my skin was brown, but it was because I was overweight with kinky, curly, messy hair. I could also relate to searching externally through a series of failed relationships with abusive men to find self-worth. So many of the issues this podcast and the book address are also simply human issues that connect us all. That is why I keep coming back.
That's dope.
I can't. That's one. It's just, and it's so true. I mean, Akash and I always talk. Well, okay. I always think about that what we're exploring, you know, in art and in storytelling, we have, through specific, we see the universal. It's like the more specific you get, the more truth and more universal the story becomes for everyone. And I think that's something that I want to do with this podcast. Yeah. And I think yeah. Akash is with me on this. And,
not
and it's
really.
Yeah, that's something.
Hey, I'm happy it helps anybody. I just don't particularly give a fuck.
Right.
I'm happy, but I'm not thinking about right. like beforehand, like let's help everyone.
No, it's not about helping. It's just about let's tell stories that are universal. You know what I mean? Ultimately, yeah, this is exploring South Asians and what it means to be South Asian in this country today. But it's really about what does it mean to be a person living in 2015?
Right.
So Sarah, really appreciate it. And always, as always, we're just going to thank you for your support because you dope. At right. Person Unknown, Steve, thanks for listening to the end. That's all I wanted to say to you.
Hey man, we appreciate you. You and maybe Sarah, and that's about it.
That's Shanaz. We got mad people that we appreciate. Settle down.
No, I'm saying that. Listen to the end.
He also says, hey, wow. He says, Arjun Gupta BK is definitely not ugly. Oh.
Whole reason he read that first tweet, Steve, was to read the second one. Don't let him lie to you, this fucking idiot.
That's it for Twitter. Let's jump to emails. Let's jump to emails.
I'll handle the first one. We got one from Sonam.
I want to do Swagistani first because it was about the podcast.
Perfect.
Swagistani. Now, we talked very openly about how positive our reaction was to the podcast, but it was kind of nice actually to hear somebody that didn't have the same reaction to, not to the podcast itself, but to Mala, for lack of a better.
We're open to negative reactions about the podcast. I'm going to just come on here and shit on you. But go ahead and send us them. You know what I mean? That's fine.
Okay. So basically, the first thing that he seemed to respond to was, that the way she answers all of the questions with a counter question kind of turned him off, which I think you have to understand. Swagistani is a very, you know, traditional counselor way of speaking. And I don't agree that she did every time. I think that she actually answered things a lot of the time. I think she was very forthright, but she did turn things back on us, which I enjoyed.
I like actually. Yeah. I normally like that. And I didn't get an air of her being upset or like, fuck you. How dare you ask me this question? I just thought it was like, she's just asking questions back, and we're just going to have this conversation that may be philosophical, maybe quasi-philosophical, maybe pseudo-philosophical.
Right. She said it. Let's face it. The human experience is ugly. Speak for yourself, Mala. I think that what she was speaking to, Swagistani, and this is not me defending, but I don't really agree with you on everything that you're saying, Swagistani. She said, you said, I'm glad that you feel that the human experience is not ugly, and I think that I would like to hear more about what you mean by that. But I think that what she was saying was that the human experience involves suffering, which is a Buddhist truth,
Buddhist,
and is a lot of people's truths and like understanding. She didn't mean that it's maybe the word ugly is what triggered you. I'm not sure. I would love to hear more about what you mean by that. And then the last thing was equating the struggle of Indian Americans to African Americans. Seriously, Mala. Even if she meant Indians under British Raj versus enslaved Africans in America, you can't compare the two. You can't even compare the experience of indentured Indian laborers in Trinidad and Tobago, Guyana, South Africa, etc., to that of enslaved Africans in this country. This is an interesting topic. Let's dive into this a little bit.
Yeah, I see people doing this a lot, and I just don't get it. I don't understand. I don't like the idea that we're putting ourselves up. To me, it feels like we're trying to pimp their struggle as our own.
That's an interesting. I didn't hear that.
I didn't necessarily hear that from her. Well, maybe a little bit, but in general, I'm always like, I don't know.
I'm gonna say I would definitely agree that the struggle of Indian Americans in this country has been minimal at best.
At
worst is what I mean. Thank you. I don't think the comparison was to African Americans, but we've now had two people on our podcast in the last several weeks, Shara Dhanani, who was an Indian growing up in that time, who called herself a slave.
Right.
She referred to herself as a slave. And now Mala speaking about this comparison. Look, I don't know enough about indentured laborers. I don't. And I should probably look that up. I probably should have done that before this podcast. But I don't know enough, but it is a situation where they were put in a level of oppression, right? And I do think that, for me, what I get from that is, yeah, we do come from people that were oppressed. And I think that the only thing that matters to me now when I think about it is just a reminder that we aren't white. We're not in that place of whiteness, which I equate with power. Right.
Sure. I like that.
And I think that that's the only thing that I draw from that is that then what it means to me is not I'm not pimping a struggle, but their struggle like becomes, in a sense, our struggle. We can't separate ourselves from that. And I see that happening in our community. Oh, well, it's black people that are struggling through shit. So that doesn't mean, so it won't be us because we're white. We're seen as in power. And I don't agree with that. I think we're still seen as other in the same way that like Latinos are seen as other, the same way that blacks are seen as other, the way that you know, Muslims, like I just think that we are. I mean, that's just my
perspective. I mean, listen, also think about the youth and how different the youth is and how annoying they are on Twitter with their outrage. They see us all as one. So I think that idea is going to fade pretty quickly. And I just don't, every race has struggled except white people. And even white people, Jews, probably got it worse than anybody. We're not we're not saying all of them are us. We're identifying specifically with black people. Latinos, right now, in America, nobody got it worse. The other Indians, the Native Americans, they all dead. So, like, you're not identifying with every minority. You're just choosing the
No, but my sentiment was to equate to all of them. Like, if I see, which is why when I see stuff happening with, like, immigration, like, I'm thinking, yeah, okay, is this something, you know, this is also something that we can't separate ourselves from, you know?
I kind of do. And I feel bad for everything that's happening here, but if we're really going to start feeling bad for shit, I mean, they're in India, there's a lot of people suffering a lot. In Africa, there's a lot of people suffering a lot. So to me, it's like if I want to line up with the suffering and I don't know. To me, it's just like that's where I don't know. That's where I'm going to go with my outrage, I guess, for lack of a better word, or empathy.
But I'm not talking
whatever.
About outrage. But I don't know. But you're acting as if you have a finite amount of empathy.
Buddy, I do. What are we talking about? Oh, no, I can't give that much of a fuck, man. I mean, an infinite amount of fucking to give. It's just crazy.
One of the other things that we had talked about was the idea of
this is what I want to say about it. There's a thing where she said she was very militant, and then she was like, I was a very brown panther, and then I only dated black dudes. And it's a thing I've noticed, and I'm not laughing at her specifically, but every really, and this made me less militant, is every militant person I know dates outside of their race. Azealia Banks. All this, her Twitter is all white people are this, horrible people. Sorry, this is not my biography because you just work with her.
But I know.
White people, give me my reparations. She's dating a white dude. I had two roommates in college, literally are the Hebrew Israelites now that like went out on street corners and talk about how white people are the devil, only dated white women. it's not just a joke you see in movies. Every militant person I see seems to only date outside of the race. And all I want to say to that is, like, you got to understand, I'm not saying you're a bad person or you're phony or you're a sellout. Maybe I am silently, I don't know. But you got to understand how ridiculous you look. Like, I'm not saying I want to marry a Desi girl, very much so. I understand it might not happen, but I also understand how ridiculous I would look getting on this podcast every week with a white wife saying Indians are this and Indians are that, and I can't believe these people are doing this to us, and then I got a white wife at home every day. You got to just have some self-awareness about how you're looking, and this is not directed at Mala specifically. This is more of a general thing. It's just like, we sit here. Maybe it's a defense mechanism.
This is separate than what we. This is separate than the yeah. Right. This is. Oh, this okay. Is I was trying separate, to bring it back.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Maybe it's just a defense mechanism, and you're not cool with the fact that you're really attracted to women outside of your race, so you overcompensate. Kind of like maybe I overcompensate with insecurity about how much knowledge I have about being Indian. We gotta at least call out that this is. It looks ridiculous.
If anyone disagrees, they can hit us up.
Holler
on
at
that.
Me.
It does. That is an interesting segue right into an email we got from Aditi, if I can find it. Here it is. I'm not going to read all of it. Well, yeah, I am. Fuck it. Hey, Arjun and Akash. So Mala talking about being married to a white guy got me thinking about what it means to date interracially and even within the race. For the longest time, I would always say, oh, I would never date a brown guy. And I'm so ashamed that I used to think like that. I've worked hard to decolonize my mind of internalized racism to recognize what led me to constantly other Desi men. And a lot of that came from trying to distance myself from Indian culture and embrace whiteness. But I'm so, all caps, but I'm so over that, which I'm so thankful for. Something that really struck me in one of your episodes is the idea that brown people think they made it when they have a white person on their arm. In that attempt to prove that they are embracing whiteness and that means success. And even now when I date and when I consciously go out looking for a Desi guy, half of me thinks that is driven by my constant need to prove my Indianness, especially after I tried to distance myself from that identity. But even now that I try to balance my Canadian identity with my Indian one, so much of the time it feels like I'm in conflict or that I have to choose one side. And so much of my worry is that now that if I don't date a Desi guy, I will once again start drifting away from my Indian identity that I fought so hard to bring back. But then how much does my significant other's race matter in terms of all of this? I would love to hear your guys' take on this and just dating in general. There's a lot in here, Aditi. First of all, I just want to say it's amazing that all this stuff is coming out. And I think this is what we want. This is the space to talk about this kind of stuff because it's complicated. I think that you struck on a thing, this conflict between needing to choose between one side. I'm going to say this, and this is my personal feeling on relationships. You should not focus on their race or their culture as much as who do you connect with. And the way that race or culture should come up in is when you're thinking about the ease of relatedness. So the way that I think about it and my interest in when I think about my ultimate partner and what it's going to be, and I date a lot of different races. I don't just date white or brown. I mean, truthfully, most of my relationships have been mainly white, actually Jewish, to be honest. But I have also dated Indians as well. And I think that one of my things I think about is, ooh, when I'm going to India, how are they going to be able to understand that culture? How are they going to be able to transition into it? But that's not supersede how do I relate to them on a day-to-day. Akash, do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I do. Actually, real quick, my little rant segued perfectly into this email. It was
amazing. Yeah.
I do think about it a lot. Also, too, I had thoughts while you were going, and I kind of forgot some of them. But the idea I just talked about, that love is like this obsession, really, more than anything, kind of ties into this thing of, and I guess maybe you're saying, what I'm saying is compatibility matters more than chemistry in the end. And a big part of compatibility, in my opinion, is what you just said. Can they relate to my culture? Now, I'm not going to marry a psychopath just because she's Indian. Nor should she marry some horrible, abusive-ass dude because, well, you know, he's brown, so let's do that. But I do think finding a brown person you connect with is a huge deal because the compatibility in the end is going to be a lot easier.
I mean, I think that – so this is where, you know, Akash and I are subtly different on this, as we understand. But I wouldn't – you know, he values compatibility a little bit more than I do at this moment in my life. I want to say this, though. I don't think your significant other's race – well, you and I might have different – your significant other's race shouldn't matter in your own personal identity, right? Your personal identity. You said that if you're worried about, you know, dating a non-Desi will pull you away from what you've been trying to bring back, is what you said in the email. No, don't give people that much power, Aditi. Don't do that.
No, listen, I've had that thought, and I've also had the thought that I would like to be with a girl who's more in touch with Indian culture than me, because it does make a difference. It does pull you a certain way. Just, it's like kind of like you are your friends. You become what your friends are. This is your best friend. This is the person you spend the most time in your life with.
But
it
your best
will
friend will
influence you.
Your best friend, though, if you're passionate about India, if you're passionate about your identity, your best friend will also fit in with that. They will be interested, and they'll be open to watching Bollywood movies, and they'll be open to going to, like, get Indian food. They will be open to that kind of stuff. So I hear what you're saying, but I also think that, like, you give too much power to someone when you say they can take you away from who you are. That's not healthy to me. I think you are
focusing a lot on the words take you away, but it can pull you in a certain direction. And just like any relationship can, if friendship, significant other, whatever, it can pull you in a certain direction. Having parents who aren't in touch with Indian culture can pull you away from Indian culture. It can't take you away completely. It can't remove you. That's you being whatever. But yeah, you definitely get pulled in a certain direction. I know a girl.
But it'll be reciprocal though, right? Sorry, just let.
Yeah,
it'll pull you, but you will also pull them.
Sure,
is my point.
Sure, but my interest in making a white girl more Indian is minimal at best. So, and I mean, I'm giving the word minimal a lot of credit there.
But if, can I say this? If you happen to become, if let's just the in whatever alternate universe that this would happen, that you ended up with a white girl, which would be, I mean, just stunning.
It would be hilarious.
It would be just the strangest thing that's happened.
Listen, I'm old enough now to understand nothing is impossible. I could marry whoever, but white girl is definitely the least likely.
If you did though, right? Yeah. In that scenario, she would become hella more Indian.
Sure,
I'm just letting you know that would happen. Sure.
I mean,
that's just a fact.
I don't care that to make you more Indian, whoever my significant other is.
No, you're talking about, like, it's a natural occurrence, right? You were saying it's a natural occurrence, this pulling. I think we're arguing semantics
right now. No. My point is, though, and I've thought about this, I would like to marry a girl. This is not a mandatory thing, but I would like to marry a girl who is more Indian than me so that she can pull me that way.
I would say, go fuck yourself and get the
white girl in this relationship and get pulled toward being Indian.
Why don't you just, like, go do that if you want to be more Indian?
You can't. Listen, we both say we're going to do it, and we both still have a lot to learn. Having a person there who's like, hey, who's just constantly telling you, I have a good Neetu is super in touch with Indian culture. I mean, this is my sister. It's nothing like that. But, like, just being around Neetu and Rajiv and I will both learn stuff about India because she just knows. She just talks about it. So it's not like, you know, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe we're arguing semantics, but it's just what happens. I think in a mature sense of understanding a relationship, you're going to pull each other in certain directions. I would like to get pulled more toward being in touch with my South Asian culture.
Last thing about Aditi's email is just about just this conflict, right? And I think that that's the whole point. Identity is so complex that, yes, our culture is a part of it. So don't forget that it's only a part of it. It's a big part. I mean, and we talk about it, obviously, so we might highlight it, but it's a part of it. So I think the idea will be able to hold space for both of your identities, your Canadian and your Indian one. That would be my
hope. That's the idea.
That would be the dream.
We are here, and we don't want to be completely Indian. As much as I act like I do, I don't want to. There's things about Indian culture that should change. But, yeah, that's the space we're trying to find here.
And also, I mean, I presented that as if that's a really easy thing to do. Don't get me wrong. It's something we struggle with.
Also, real quick, just so we're completely clear, the compatibility thing I'm talking about, just like you, I'm a very obsessive personality. So if I'm into a girl and we connect on a chemistry level, it's just a wrap. Like, I talk a big game, but we'll see what actually happens.
I've seen that happen. I think we have time for, sadly, we don't have time to jump into Sonam's. Sonam, we're going to get you next week because I like your email. Your email about what it means to be a man is, I think, big. And I think that I want to save time for that. But we had a comment on Overly. Are you good with that?
Yeah, the name's comment, right?
Let's jump into. We had a comment on our podcast. I think that was last week's Overly Assimilated.
Yeah, it was last week's discussion episode.
Hi, guys. This is from Mithili. Hi, guys. I just wanted to chime in about the name game that people play. I completely agree that it's ridiculous that new Indian parents give their kids names that are kind of Indian when pronounced, but when it's written, it looks like a non-Indian name. For example, a friend of mine told me that someone they knew, both parents are Indian, by the way, named their kid Nathan, quote unquote. But when pronounced, it sounds like Nathan. Is that his? I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is supposed to be another name for Lord Krishna. But, like, let's be real. No one's going to pronounce it that way. I'd much rather someone be straight up with why they named their children and what they did instead of trying to act like they did it because of the meaning behind the name. I understand if someone names their children with easier to pronounce Indian names, because for me it's a daily struggle trying to get people to say my name right when it's not that difficult, Mithali or Mithali. And I can totally feel for the kids who... I'm sorry. I think I fucked her name up, which is
hilarious.
Retarded.
Whatever.
I can totally feel for the kids who have extremely long and difficult names. But it blows my mind when someone has an easy name and they go out of their way to make people say it wrong. I know someone named Sachin, and he introduces himself as Sachin. Insert eye-rolling emoji here. Anyway, that's all I wanted to rant about for now. Just wanted to add that I love what you guys are doing here and can't wait to see what you have in store. Mithali. Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't know how many more times I can. I mean, I'm happy to say it more times. Listen, it's fucking. You got to stop. Just stop. I mean, I want to have a lot of compassion for you guys.
You're fucking losers.
Sachin? Your name's Sachin. It's a beautiful name.
You a loser,
it's a beautiful
dog.
Name.
You a loser,
okay.
Sachin. Right. You a bum ass loser, son. Get a fucking ounce of self confidence in your goddamn shitty ass personality.
It's, I mean, that alone, the saying your name incorrectly. Now, it was one thing when Gotham changed his name to spell it differently so that people would be able to say it correctly.
Yeah.
Right?
Because he's really powerful and came on the podcast. So it's a completely different story.
Right. I missed your joke entirely. But like when you have a name, Sachin, and then you're letting people off the hook by saying Sachin. It's like, I don't want to bow down to you, fucker. To me, it's a submissive act. I don't, and maybe this is just, maybe it's an ego thing that I need to have more.
No, it's not an ego thing. It's actually an extreme lack of self-confidence on his part. It's not a removal of ego. It is a...
No. It's an ego thing for me that I don't want to be submissive to, like, to let you, you know. I mean, I don't want to let other people off the hook. My name is Arjun. It's not Arjun. It's not Arjun. It's Arjun. It's a beautiful name. I'm proud of it, and I love it, and I'm not going to let you just, like, go around and say whatever the fuck you want, because you can't have the, like... You can't have the expansiveness to grow past your limitations. I'm not going to hold space for that. I'm not. And I don't think we should. And I know it's a subtle thing and maybe it's really small, but we have to ask better of ourselves.
Yeah, I don't think it's... I think it is an ego thing when you make other people say it the way it needs to be said. But for you, you say your name the right way. I actually heard this story yesterday from a white friend of mine. He had a Canadian classmate. He grew up in Canada. Let's say his name was Ravi, and he called himself Rob. It was something like that. And he told this one white teacher, actually, he's like, my name is Rob. She's like, that's not your name. He goes, yes, it is. She goes, what did your parents name you? And then he said, Ravi. And then she goes, that's your name. And that is a super powerful thing. If you don't... Here's actually an anecdote about me doing comedy that kind of applies. I used to do hood rooms when I first started, and the guy didn't hear my name right, and he'd introduce me as Amash. And the first two times, I just didn't say anything because I was so nervous. And then someone pulled me aside. He's like, that's your name. You own that. That's all you have. And this is not the same because it's not a business, but your name is, in the end, all you have.
It's the first thing that you're introducing
people
with.
It is the foundation of who you are.
I mean, listen, and it's one thing, listen, if you don't identify with your name, frankly, I'm going to say this, if you don't identify with the name to the point that you want to mispronounce it, change your fucking name.
Yeah,
go get it legally changed.
Herman, you loser.
But like, go get it legal. Then have the balls to commit to that change. But if you're just, I get so frustrated with my family members that say their name in a whiteified way. It's just like, what? Go fuck yourselves.
I used to do it, and then at a certain point, it was like, no, I'm going to say my name correctly. And if you choose to call me Akash anyway, fuck, that's on you.
Yeah. But with kids with their name, I mean, when you're naming kids, I mean, if you're spelling it Nathan, no one's going to know that's Indian. That's not an Indian name. You can pronounce it Indian.
My mom wants me to cuss on this podcast less because she listens, and I think I already did it a few times. But that's just a wussy thing to do. I'm going to edit it for Umma. But, like, you're just a wimp. Just say it the right way. Give the kid an Indian name. Don't, like, double entendre the name.
Right. That's complicated.
Yeah.
That's complicated. I think that's all the time we have for today. thank you for all of you guys that wrote messages. The messages that we've been starting to receive are really, really, you know, thought provoking for us, which is really exciting, because then it gives, you know, hopefully that will just keep, we all as a community will keep just provoking different thoughts. It's exciting. It's really exciting. So beautiful. I appreciate all of you guys that are writing in, and I encourage you guys to keep doing that.
Keep sending us emails. Keep sending us tweets. Rate the podcast. Send messages to iTunes. You know what I mean? Do a little nice review of the podcast. Five stars. Tell people about it. Arjun always says this. I think it's a really great, great quote. We are only as strong as our community. We need your help. Let's get the word out.
Word. I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
And we'll catch you in a couple days.
God bless.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.